Okay, the workshop at 2:30 is about to begin. It's called Lessons from the Gibraltar Column. My name is Patrick. I'm an organizer of the second annual New York City Anarchist Book Fair. I'm also a member of NEFAC, the largest anarchist federation in North America. And right now it's my honor to introduce, for the second year, George Sanko. George Sanko is a veteran of the Gibraltar Column of the Spanish Civil War, in which he fought during for all 3 years when he was 16. He left Paris to fight that. And right now, I'm just going to share with you some experiences and lessons that highlight our libertarian ideal, and especially this great historic point when it dawned, actually. So without further ado, this is George Sanko.
Good afternoon, friends, amigos, compañeros, and I'm very flattered by your presence because we live in a very difficult situation, and the apathy is reigning all over, mainly among the young people. In Germany, they had, during Hitler, the Minister of Disinformation, and we have it also here in our country, in the United States. You just look at the TV, a movie, you read in the paper, it's talking about the idol, about the woman. I love women. They show the kind of the doggy, the horsey, and at the end, at the 8th, 9th page, they say 8 soldiers have been killed in Iraq, and we bombed there. And after that, they talk about economical situation. It looks like they want to deviate us from the war. They want to deviate us of the reality. And in addition to that, what we have actually here in our country, that never we had it, that no security in work, no security in anything, everything is concentrated, all money, in Iraq. In Iraq, why? We said that Dubia said that he wants to implant the freedom. Why doesn't he do that in Africa, where 1 million people are slaughtered every year? Oh, yeah. They don't have oil. Meanwhile, Iraq has oil. I think we are right now at the edge of a precipice. We are at the edge of a cliff. And nobody sees anything. Everybody is blind. And so I am very flattered to see young people who is interested to listen to what we think, what we can do. I will go a few minutes back in the history, because you weren't born, maybe even your parents weren't born at that time, after the World War I, when it has been a very bloody war. It was socialists fighting against socialists, the German and the French, English, and it was kind of imposition. The capitalism was cruel. They were fighting for colony, for dominance, and the people were suffering with discipline. They could shoot 10,000 soldiers in subordination, but just because they were not obeying order. And so after the World War I, 40 years old for us, they were old. I was born after World War I. I was 15, 16 years old. And we young people were seeing that something was wrong. Meanwhile, these old, 40 years old, they were humiliated, angry, impotent, and they didn't want any change. They want just keep living. Majority of Americans are like that now. They don't want to look at the reality. They want to keep living in the little things because they neglect the family. Both are working. The children are unruly. They can be fired anytime. they're orphans. The American people is orphan, completely orphan, abandoned. And the communists betray the people. On my time, when I was young, the communism was the hope of the proletariat. But suddenly, how can you admit that in Russia, the communism, Stalin remained 50 years. Mao Zedong in China remained 30 years dictator. You have seen even Cuba. It's wonderful. But how come Castro remained 50 years? Now his brother, it's dynasty, it's kingdom. Well, what's going on? And we anarchists, we deal differently. We are the only organization who take the human aspect of the mankind, of the history of everything. We are the only people who understand, and we, thanks to Kropotkin, Bakunin, who said that the power perverts the men. The power perverts the men. I can tell Patrick, if I am the boss, go bring me a glass of water. That's what happened with the communists. They have the commissar. And so suddenly, people doesn't believe anymore in communism. They don't believe anymore in Marxism. But we are here. And most of the people would say, oh, it's an illusion. It's just an ideology, the anarchism. No. I have seen it working in Spain, like Pulitzer Davids have been taken by CNTFI, which is the anarchist organization in Spain. And they had factory 300-400 workers. They had secretary, they had mechanic, they had bookkeeper, and everything was working perfectly well. But going outside, closing the door of the factory, everybody was equal. I will tell you, when I was young, like I said, the older people were scared and they let Germany, Italy get growing. Suddenly we learned that in Spain they had election and the Republican won. We were elated. It was a star which appeared in the sky, a star of freedom. We were happy, but it didn't last very long because Franco, with his horde, with his mercenary, with his colonial army, attacked Spain, Republican Spain, and he was destroying our dream. And so we say, no, we want this dream because we cannot keep living in between this old generation, completely annihilated mentally, and no hope in the future, any place in the world. In the United States, Roosevelt was neutral. Everybody didn't want to intervene. And we went to Spain. 45,000 volunteers from 55 countries without knowing each other spontaneously, just because we wanted to protect, to fight, to keep our dream, the dream of the proletariat, the working people. It didn't last because the democracy betrayed us. The democracy betrayed us and they closed the border. Meanwhile, Hitler and Mussolini sent more soldiers to Spain. They annihilated us. Anyhow, we are living here also in a situation a little bit similar. And I'm very happy to see younger generation reacting and understanding, because we know that after 1960, we don't have any more any movement of mass. After the Vietnam War, when the veterans were coming back from Vietnam and they were doing manifestation and fighting against the cop on the street. Now we have 300,000 veteran from the war in Iraq. They are homeless, going on the street. I will explain you something. When you fight for an ideal, I fought in Spain in the International Brigade, and also my parents wanted to save me to be drafted, and from France we went to Argentina to save me, because he was foreseen coming to World War II. And I enlisted and I fought in the Free French Forces in Africa, in Italy, in France. I fought twice, and I was facing enemy, facing fascism, facing people who wanted to dominate us, change our way of life. Meanwhile, we sent kids from Ohio, Chicago, Florida, New York, to a country that they never heard of before, and they have to kill people that they don't know anything, they don't have even communication, and there is no battlefront. We had a battlefront, we were fighting against enemy, and I am 90 years old, I sleep like a baby, and believe me, I was good, and I participated in the largest battlefront in the Monte Cassino disembarkment in France, in battle in North Africa. I was wounded twice. I sleep like a baby because I had to do it. But I can't imagine a kid from New York or from here, he is surrounded by enemies. He doesn't know who the enemies. He threw a bomb and suddenly he fired. Kids maimed, without arms, dying, a woman, pregnant woman, laying on the floor, an old man, and constantly bombing. And so they become nervous, they shoot at random. And when they leave the army, all that works. Because you know very well that I can't tell you whatever I want, I cannot convince you, but your conscience is dictating your belief, your thinking, your behavior, what your conscience. It's a very cruel dictator. It's a controller of your movement, of your thinking. And these kids, when they came back to United States, they had to face the reality of what they have done. Okay, what can we do for the future? Because we cannot keep living in a situation when we have 1 million homeless in the United States, 1 million homeless. We have 7 or 8 million people in the prison, sometimes because they smoke marijuana or misconduct whatsoever. And there is no security either in the world or whatsoever. And we have to do something. We cannot accept that some people live on a few dollars per day when some other people are making $107 million a year. It doesn't make any sense. $107 million a year. And kind of everybody is accepting the situation. Nobody rebels. Now, the anarchist movement never have been so strong. We never had an opportunity to defend the people, the working class. And here we are, maybe younger people. They should say, no, we are human beings. I'm not a dog. And I cannot accept to work for pennies. Meanwhile, some of the people, the new class of riches and other riches, as a matter of fact, a lot of capitalists are moving the capital to England, France, Spain, and Europe. They protect themselves. Meanwhile, we see this housing project, this housing scam, where the people are losing the money they're putting in the houses, they're evicted. Eviction doesn't exist in other country. What we have to do, we have to be solidarity and create a new spirit of the normal spirit, human. We don't have to be different. We are just human. What do we want? We want to live a decent, nice, agreeable life. And we have to organize. Unfortunately, as you know, the union had only 7%. When in Spain, in France, it's 80-90% of the working people in the factory. Here, it looks like the mass of the working people is completely abandoned, and they don't know where to go, what to do, and the government keep with his minister of disinformation, giving us every time some information, you can do this, you can do that, we are fabulous, we bring freedom to Iraq. They don't want to have any freedom. We killed 1 million people over there. They can do whatever they want by themselves without intervention. And that is the purpose. I have seen in Montreal, I have seen in other places, the anarchism is growing. The people, maybe among the younger people, waking up, and they say, okay, well, what is my future? What is my future? Not everybody can make $100 million a year in a job. What is my future? To work for a few pennies per day? How long? Without houses, without enjoying the life. Maybe us, I don't know what you are, but you're an 87th generation, and I believe in the life I live here. And I don't know if there is another life, I don't care. But I want to live here, I want to wake up warm, comfortable, eat and enjoy my life. And we are squeezed with this minister of disinformation. I have this experience several times. Like I said, World War I, we had this moment that the people were squeezed. After that, we had the several revolution, and World War I, World War II, and I never have been communist. I always was anarchist. And I have seen how can we accept that in Russia, after 70 years of communism, in 1 year, they disappear. They disappear because they had the layer of bosses, of commissar, and etc. I would like to share with you and to see what do you think. Do you feel like me that we should intervene and not be only the books who are completely impotent and accept everything? We go on manifestation on the street now. The people is apathetic, it's scared, it's deviated. I would like to know, what do you see? How are you feel the situation? It will not get better, because economically, we are in bankruptcy. America is dying. America is dying completely. China has more money than we have. We keep with the idea of the imperialism sending soldiers all over. We are provoking Russia with the military bases. And so I would like to know what is your opinion about what could we do and what is the meaning for you, the anarchism? Why did you join, or did you come by curiosity only to learn how we work or whatsoever?
Okay, so I guess we're gonna turn this over to questions and then go into discussion from there. So I'll be taking questions. So if you have any questions, please raise your hand for George. Okay, yeah, you were there.
I like you said that China has more money than us in dollar, you know? China has more dollar than the United States. So my question is, you can say something to us, what is the similarity we can find in the capitalism crisis we are living now? What's happening, first war, in the Second War, and what we are living in Iraq now, and possibly with the new war with Iran.
She's wondering about similarities in World War I, and then World War II. About the similarities.
Now the question is, how we can learn from the anarchist point of view how the capitalist society, all the time that they are in Christ, they build war. Why this happened? Why capitalists need war to survive?
How can you learn, and why do you think capitalists build war all the time?
We think we build war.
Yeah, the capitalists, and how, what we can do about it, and what lessons.
Well, first of all, the capitalism wants to dominate. That's what it wants, dominate. Dominate markets. And that, like I said previously, we don't go to Africa. We don't go to Africa to quell any kind of unrest because they don't have oil. And the prime, the richest beer, they have the fuel, are exported already.
Can you speak into it? Get a little closer?
There. Now, the war is an industry of the capitalism, like for instance in Iraq we have 160,000 mercenary making $1,000 a day. $1,000 a day, it's hundreds of million dollars per day that we spend. And if we have, what about the million homeless that we have at home? We don't take care about them. Look at the hospital, they're not cured. And the capitalism is brazen because they don't have an opposition. When they had the communism, they were scared of the communism. But the communism collapsed. And there is no opposition. There is no what our movement is against them. None. And so they are honored. They can do whatever they want.
Probably explained this a million times, but just to talk about the future of anarchism, I was just wondering if you could, sometimes it's harder within a broader sense, so I was just wondering if you could sort of talk about the FAI and the CNT and the 2 million or more anarchists during your time in the Spanish Civil War.
He wants you to explain what happened during the Spanish Civil War. To explain what happened with the CNT during the Spanish Civil War.
It's very simple what happened in our situation. Dubia is not stupid, and all the people who surrounding them, none of them has been in the army. They don't know what is to fight. They know perfectly well that we are in bankruptcy. We're in bankruptcy collapsing. In any moment, the economy can collapse, we can go back to what we had in 1929, a depression time. But he will create more chaos, more problem. And so when the Democrat will take, because the Democrat will be elected as president for the next period of time, and they will have to leave Iraq, and he will find America without job, without, look at that, we don't have Ford Motor, we don't have any big factory, everybody is leaving, there is no production. And so Dubia will say to Trimofete, you see, as long as I was in the government ahead, we were number one, we were the most powerful country. Now came to Democrat, they screw it. And they you understand, it's a psychological maneuver that he's doing.
George, that was not the question. The question was about the anarchists during the Spanish Civil War.
Can you talk about the anarchists during the Spanish Civil War?
Or Spanish?
Spanish.
But that's not the
point. Yeah, they want to know about it. Can you talk about it?
Well, You know, I have tinnitus, and the words come before sometimes. I'm very sorry. And I had also during in Libya. In Libya, I was wounded, and I had malaria. At that time, they were curing with quinine, and it affects the hearing. They don't do it anymore. And so, instead, the words I have sent sometimes to me. What you want, it's to know about the Spanish Civil War, what happened. Okay. In Spanish Civil War, like I said, the Spanish people was not expecting anything to surge. And in October, they had the election 1936, won the Republican government. Franco attacked the 17th, July 17th. We, International Brigade, we went volunteers to fight for the Republic. Like I said, we didn't have any experience. My experience was when I came with other group of friends in the Arno Durruti, the legendary anarchist Durruti, in Aragon. They gave me a gun, and my training was to take to a plane with a little cliff and to say, you can check your gun shooting three times to be acquainted with your gun. That was my military training. Can you imagine? 16 years old, three shot, and 100 bullets and a gun. To fight against, at that time, the Spanish army and the colonial army, they had were the best in the world. And so, at the beginning, Franco, before we came to Spain, Franco was taking town after town after town, almost without any resistance. But when he started coming to the places where the International Brigade were protecting, then he was surprised that we were opposing him, like he was close to Madrid. Close to Madrid and about 10 miles. And as a joke, he called a very well-known restaurant in Madrid and he made the reservation for the next week, saying that he will come and to have a dinner at that hotel, at that restaurant. And so he left all his soldiers attacking us and we were staying there. He was killing, I was surrounded by corpses, by wounded, but we stayed. We didn't come there to run away. And he sent more soldiers and we stayed in Madrid, the same position. That's where we acquired the experience in fighting. All the world was really petrified to see that these kids, these soldiers, these people who never had seen a gun, have been facing the best army in the world, and we stayed there for 1 year. And we could have been fighting, winning also the war. The only country who was helping us was Russia. And the other country is Mexico. Mexico and Russia. The Russians were sending weapons, they were sending tanks, and also soldiers to fight. But when the United Nations, which at that time was called the Society of Nations, decided that they had to solve this problem, and they closed the border of France, of Spanish with France, and so they couldn't receive any, we couldn't receive any more ammunition or anything. Meanwhile, Franco was receiving weapons from Germany, from Mussolini, even soldiers, 100,000 Italian, they went over there. And it was a moment that we couldn't make anymore. And they decided that all the foreign forces will be leaving Spain. But Franco receive more soldiers from Italy and Germany. Meanwhile, they asked the International Brigade to leave. It was in September 1938, we paraded the first last time in Spain. We were the hope because we could stop any place that Franco. We had already enough military experiences to fight against the best army in the world. And they asked, they said, well, but United Nations, the Society of the Nations, decided that we have to retrieve all the foreign forces from Spain and let them settle their own private problem. We paraded in Barcelona. It was so moving that when Bacchanalia said, you are legend, you are history, and when the war will be over and the pigeon of the peace will be reigning, come back here, that will be your country. That's what I'm saying until now. I am legend, but very soon I will be history. We have, as a matter of fact, bad news. In the last 2 months, we lost 6 heroes from the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. Mo Fishman, we have Smorodin, we have Osherov, Milt Wolf was the last commander. All these people, we went to Spain to fight. We were fighting for Spain, but we were fighting for our idea. It was the only situation in the world when people from other country come to fight to other country for their own idea. But unfortunately, the democracy betrayed us. They didn't give us the chance. And that's how Franco won the war. If we had succeeded in Spain, we would save 54 million people who died in World War II, because we wouldn't have World War II if we had stopped the fascism in Spain. But unfortunately, even Roosevelt, he said that it was his biggest blunder that he didn't help us.
Okay, next question.
Yeah, how about that?
While you were in the Gerudis fighting in Spain, did you have any meetings with, did you see in action the women's militia of the anarchists?
While you were fighting in Spain, when you were in Spain fighting, did you run in contact with the women's militia, the free women of Spain? The women? The ladies of Spain? From Spain, the anarchists
of Spain. Oh, yes. Yes, of course. But it was very different from what we have here when we mixed the women with the men. We had a company and brigade of women, commanded by women, and they were very brave. Now, from the United States came 300 volunteer women. They were in the Red Cross, driving ambulances, and the women we have perfectly well, but they were not mixed like we have in the army here. You know, here the women go, with the soldier, they know that they will be raped most of the time. It's human. In Spain, we have foreseen already, and so they were different command, and they were very brave, and they have been fighting on the front with very much courage.
Next question. Okay.
The question may have been asked, because I just got here, but I read a lot about the Spanish Civil War, Thomas Catalonia, and one of the parts that most interested me, and if you've already addressed this question, then
please so indicate. But one part of it, and some of it's being replayed here in battles within the left. Can you talk a little bit about how my understanding is that the so-called communist wing, Stalin's bunch, spent a good deal of time shooting anarchists as well as fascists, which of course helped Franco ultimately. Can you talk about that at all?
You must know that the communists fighting the anarchists in Spain.
The communists?
Fighting the anarchists.
In Spain?
Yeah.
They were fighting with what?
The anarchists? Or did the communists and anarchists
fight? Yeah.
Yeah, but what happened that, of course, Russia, the communists, they were helping mainly the communist party in Spain. They were sending even soldiers and they were giving weapons, food to Spain. We had a situation in Barcelona where there was a shooting among the communists and the anarchists. We had the situation. But it wasn't something which was decisive in the civil war. It was just a difference. You can imagine we have different, we have the Democrats, we have the Republicans, we have communists, anarchists, and even we have the communist different section. We have the PUM, we have the Communist Party, which was accepted by the Soviet Union. And we had this problem. But it didn't result in being something very important for the course of the Civil War.
Thank you.
Okay, next question.
And the Spanish Civil War, the work class, how they are in that time in the war? Like you said, the U.S. will be in depression, so the work class don't want to have work, you know? Everybody will be in the street, no work, no money. So we are, this is what you have to do. What you can share with the Spanish war? Because war, we don't have work, no people will be in the street. So how relationship we anarchists with the people here is no work?
Okay, she wants to know about how in Spain you talk in Spain you talk to the working class there, how the anarchists talk to working class, talk to the proletariat, how you talk to the people, how you talk to the
workers,
yeah, to the working class, how you communicate that. Because it's very similar here in the United States.
Well, you know historically already. Catalonia and Aragon have been dominated by the anarchists. And until now, anarchists dominate completely. I am in contact with the union in Madrid, the CNT and PAI, and of course it was a very rough situation because mainly at the end, because the German and the Italian, they sunk 8 Russian ships who were bringing ammunition and weapon to and so Russia decided not to help anymore. And of course the communists had better weapons, they had better food, and we had really to struggle to get even weapons. But all that, like I said previously, didn't interfere with the result of what happened. The result was that the democracy were covered, they closed the border, and they didn't let us having supply. The Spanish Republic had millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in the banks in the capitalistic country, but they just froze all these funds and we couldn't use that to buy weapons. And so, like I said, I don't remember when we have seen tanks, a few tanks only. Meanwhile, we had hundreds of tanks, German and Italian airplane. You know about Guernica. When the pilot, German pilots have been trained to come to fight in Spain, they didn't have any experience. They were young pilots, and so they needed have some experience and training. Guernica is a town with several thousand people who once a month have a fair, big fair, with food and other things. And this plague, Stuka, eliminated entire town. You know about Guernica. That's where the Germans were training their pilots. You understand? And so it was a very difficult situation. And once again, the difference in between the communists and the anarchists didn't interfere with the civil war in itself, because we were on different front. I was on the front of the anarchists. I was fighting against the fascists. And like in the south, like Sevilla or this area, they were the communists. And so we did interfere. We had certain incidents, but it wasn't as a result, it didn't have any influence on the result of the war.
Okay?
Yeah.
I just wonder if you could repeat the questions that you get to some of the
Okay.
And actually, can you just move the mic a little lower?
Yeah, it's not good.
Do what? The microphone is not good. The microphone is not good. They have to talk into the microphone a little bit. No, just in general. Just in general. Let me take your question. Okay, is there and the next question, please? Okay, yep. You?
Oh, okay. So one thing you point out is that you believe, and I think you're correct here, that the revolutionary conditions in the United States are getting better and better to some extent because of this economic downturn. Yet, you believe the anarchist movement seems to be growing more and more here. Do you feel like the anarchist movement here would grow quicker and become more powerful if it adopted a model more based on something like, organizing workers? Or do you think it would organize and grow faster if it tried sort of different forms of organization? But see, in my opinion, is that the reason, maybe one of the reasons the anarchist movement was so powerful in Spain was you had a clear base, a union which did things for people, very concrete, and allowed a space for self-organization. But you don't have that here in the United States. Even anarchist efforts to organize along the lines of the Spanish Civil War by working in unions and whatnot here do not seem, they've been minor successes, I think. They don't seem to be taking off like wildfire. Maybe it's just too early, or maybe even though we're having this economic downturn, conditions are different. So I'm trying to figure out what form of organization do you think best helps the Spanish people mobilize the Spanish Civil War, and is that form of organization perhaps different today in America? I hope that question made some sense.
So did everybody hear that question? Or?
No. It's pretty clear that one of the reasons the Spanish were successful in the Spanish Civil War was they built off unions. We don't have that in the United States. What form of organization do you believe can mobilize people in the United States?
He wants to know what form in the United States, what form can organize the people the best for revolution?
Yeah.
How can you organize the people? Do you want it in the union, or do you want it in some other form that's not the union? Mm-hmm. What's the best form here in the United States today?
Yeah, of course. Like in Spain and other places where the anarchists are very powerful, they have to organize union, because with the union, you dominate the industry, you dominate the activity of the country. And that's like, for instance, in Spain, the CNT and FAI is the largest syndicate, they call it its union. They oppose, it's enough for them to declare a strike and all the industries paralyzed. It's a power, the only power that the worker have, a kind of capitalist. The capitalists have the money, they have the police, they have the army, they have everything at their power, and the law, maybe the law, they can put in jail anybody if they want. Now the first thing to do is consolidate the union, to have a powerful union, because with the union you dominate and you put pressure on the capitalists if they want to exploit. There is no exploitation. We have the exploitation here, and we take advantage of these Mexican immigrants. We pay them whatever we want, and they are not protected. The worker don't have capital. The capital is the hands that they are lending to work. They are hiring people for the hands to work. But they need a protection. And the union, I have seen like France, Germany, England, and Spain have powerful union. Unfortunately, United States, it was a time, long time ago, when the union was dominated by the mafia. And when the mafia were doing extortion, and they were talking with the bosses of the mafia, of the union, who were making $200,000-$300,000 a year with chauffeur, and just go on strike when they want to put the pressure and blackmail any industry. They were asking the union. It was very dirty, the union in the United States. And after the World War II, they started getting more cleaner, but they never succeeded very much because they didn't defend with force the interests of the people. And it's possible to change the page of the history and start a new chapter. And if it worked in other countries, there is no reason why it can work here.
Okay. Yeah.
Just kind of going on that, like you said earlier, unions in America, we have about 7% of the private workforce is organized in this country. So I wonder if you maybe speak to what we need to do to increase that, because the laws against this, like you said, the state is against. It's very hard to organize in this country. And what can we do to increase those numbers?
What? Yeah.
How can we make the unions grow here? Yeah. How can we do that?
Well, it's among all the people who are here, all the people, they work someplace, they are called people who are working here with factories or industry or any kind of work, it's to organize. We have to go from the scratches here, because you know we have only 7% of the working people in the union. And with 7%, they cannot go on strike, they cannot request any benefit, they cannot increase the situation. I think we have to do it from the scratches before the country is over. Because, like I said, we owe too much money. We are borrowing. That the capitalists are borrowing all this money. And we will have to pay for that. And it's not acceptable. We cannot be suffering because the capitalists, there never have been such a gap of difference in any country in the world as we have here among the poorest people and the richest people. There is no country in the world where they have. We never had that, because in the past, 30, 40, 50 years ago, a worker, American worker, had his house, his car, he was working, the wife was the worker, was taking care of the family. It finished that. Now both of them are working, they neglect their children, they become murderers. You see the teenagers are killing. Did you see that the girls among from 14 to 19 years old, 40% have hereditary diseases because the parents are not supervising them. And when they come back from the work, they feel guilty that they neglect the children and they let them loose. It's a situation which has to change. We are burying ourselves. We are digging a grave over this country. And it changed completely. I ask my wife sometimes, you are sure if we live still in America here? You know, I'm still here.
You, Alice?
Yeah, I was glad you talked about exploitation, because I read recently that the rate of productivity in the last 35 years in the U.S. has increased by 81%. And yet we make less money now, working people, we make less money now than we did 35 years ago, a lot less. So we're working much harder for less pay. And most people seem to realize that. And it's true, I mean, the unions are disappearing, and I'm a union member, but my union, I mean, the top levels of the leadership are kind of in bed with the bosses. They don't really fight or do anything. And it's true, when there's only 7% or 11% or whatever it is, people have unions. The unions can't really, they can't do that much because they don't have that much outside support. My question is really about the, you know, getting unions to grow and become a force that can fight for the, you know, working class. I think the struggle to free Mumia Jamal from prison is a lot like the struggle to free Salman Vanzetti. That defined the generation back then, the political generation. I think Mumia Jamal's situation now is a similar kind of case where the unions can be revitalized if they join in this battle. I'm just wondering if you've heard about Mumia Jamal and what you think of that whole movement to get him out of jail.
About Mumia Jamal?
What?
Mumia?
I have trusting
Mumia. Mumia Abu-Jamal, he's a political prisoner in Philadelphia. You know, the political prisoner in Philadelphia? Mumia. Mumia, he's a political prisoner in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Have you heard about him? And they want to know if you know what you think about the political prisoners in America and about the union supporting political prisoners.
Yeah,
or if you know any about it.
Well, of course, here we don't have any union, the strength, and so it's out of question. But definitely, if we have a union strong, like we have in other countries, we make the decision. Like you see in France, they have the best system, you know, you are protected completely, no eviction, you can be out of work for 10 years, the government pay you the health care, hospital, prescription, education for free. This Sarkozy, his right winger, he wanted to change everything. But the union put imposition on here, and they tell him if he change something, they will paralyze the country completely, and they're in condition to do that. Yes, definitely, the union can help to run the country, definitely, but you have to organize them, they're representative of the working forces.
Priya?
There's very little class consciousness here in America compared to obviously circumstances, you know, the Spanish Civil War, and also, like you said, the union bosses seem to be working for the capitalists, basically to control the workers and make them accept whatever crumbs they're given. But that does not mean that there are not a lot of angry, discontented workers who have a lot of power to shut down industry and cripple a country just like the workers in France did. So there's definitely models out there. And I think the uprising in Oaxaca when people actually took over the city is another example of popular organizing among different sectors. One problem in America is that radical anarchist voices are marginalized and silenced, and the media makes us look like terrorists and extremists and dangerous. So these are the circumstances. And you didn't have to deal with the media the way we do, which really negates completely, this radical consciousness of an enemy, it's a target, it's often overlooked, but it's really one of the main reasons people can't even think about possibilities, like it surrendered their imagination. So, as far as targets,
she wants to know how anarchists can organize like around the media, because the media makes anarchists look like terrorists. The media, like the news, Fox 45, that makes anarchists look like terrorists. And how can we expect people to know that we're not terrorists because the media tells them lies, you know?
Yeah, I agree that the media is betraying the working class, and the media is completely it's completely on the side of the capitalism, and we can use our own media. In not every country we have papers and who are defending the worker rights. And the media, I agree with you, they're completely deformed as a matter of fact. Even they recognize that they are presenting the news on such a form like deviating the attention, not to telling us that everything is fine, everything is wonderful, when we know that it's not fine. Because all the figures we have about unemployment, about the situation, false. Because after 6 months that you are unemployed, you are not counted anymore as unemployed. You're considered as employed. We have, I'm sure we have 10 or 15% of unemployed. We can see it on the street. And the homeless, all that, it's impossible. A contradiction like this one to have 1 million people. In Atlanta, for instance, but they do the solution, the cops come and they kick them from one area to another. They have to sleep on the benches because they don't have money to go to the hotel, they don't have houses. And from there, they kick them to another place. It's another solution. I say, okay, shoot all of them, you will not have an employed or whatever. The capitalist, it's cruel. They talk about the patriotism. They say that they do be all the other people. They say that those who oppose the war against Iraq are not patriotic. He is patriotic, sitting by himself with his family. All the rich people, they invoke the patriotism to send the worker to fight for them. And meanwhile, they are amassing and creating more fortune for themselves.
Okay, we're going to have time for one more question. So, you, Adam, I guess. Maybe we can take two if we have time. You, Adam, right there, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Considering the political sectarianism that existed between communists and anarchists during the Civil War, how do you think we could prevent that from happening again in the event of a similar situation? Or is that just a symptom of Stalinism?
How can we organize anarchists and communists organize together, despite the differences?
Unfortunately, I think that it would be very difficult because the communists have been taking roots in poor people, deluded completely. They have deluded the people with promises that everything will be fine. But we have seen that in practice, in the country where the communism was working, it was a disaster. We know we have seen that the Soviet Union, we have seen in Cuba, we have seen that Yugoslavia, we have seen that in China, like in China, for instance. Is it communism that they put people in jail, they have multi-millionaire, all that? I don't believe that we ever can have an agreement because we are 100% on the side of the working classes. We don't have any bosses. We don't have any masters. We don't have anybody above us. We have people who have more knowledge than we have. And these people, we use them in the manufacturing area, engineering. I don't know anything about architecture, for instance. He can teach me. He can have a job bigger than me, whatsoever. But in what is production, what is solution, his kind of life, remuneration, all that has control. We are all human beings. All of us have the right to live decently. I cannot imagine why somebody has five cars, six, seven houses, and maids, and he can travel all over the world, and the poor guy, he doesn't have a few coins to take a bus. And that's, maybe I am a Don Quixote. I grew up in France. And the kids, the parents give allowance per week, so many francs. And I would say a homeless on the street, sitting on the I would give him my allowance, all that, to the last penny, because I cannot see people suffering. I cannot see people, that's why I went twice to fight. I'm 90 years old, I'm still fighting with my words, I'm not able to fight anymore with my fish. And so it's we are too far apart with the communists to have a union with them. But by what we can do, we have a lot of people deceived and have our idea who are communists or call themselves communists. We can't attract them to us.
Okay, I think we're good.